You are listening to the Better Together podcast, brought to you by the National Association of Free Will Baptists.
Welcome to the Better Together podcast, where we look for ways we can work together to advance the cause of Christ among Free Will Baptists around the world. Today, we have with us Dr. Gordon Penfold. He works with Turnaround Pastors, and you may have read several of his books, but the one we're going to talk about today is Pastor Unique, and what it tells us about turnaround pastors and some of the challenges that pastors and churches are facing today. So, Dr. Penfold, thank you for taking the time to join us today, my friend.
Well, thank you, Dr. Moody, for hosting me today. This is a great privilege. And also, just in our conversations, I'm just amazed at the energy that you bring into the National Association of Free Will Baptists. You're doing some great things to kind of help right the ship and turn things around. And we both share the same passion. We desire to see pastors and churches thriving, becoming soul-winning, disciple-making congregations. And that's what drives us, and I know that's what drives you. So thank you again for inviting me. This is a great privilege.
Well, I appreciate that, and we appreciate what you've done for us as Free Will Baptist and really the greater body of Christ trying to help our churches in the situations they're facing today. And so it's pretty tough out there right now, isn't it, Dr. Penfold?
Oh, it is. We estimate before COVID, we estimated 80 to 85% of the churches were either plateaued or declining when it came to worship attendance. And we always try and look at worship attendance. You can't use membership because, you know, sometimes people are voting from the cemetery.
Yes.
But attendance is a good marker. And I wrote this some years ago, and I just want to use it by way of introduction to help us understand where pastors and churches are. A great number of churches are characterized by an inward self-serving focus, territorialism, bullies, power brokers, passivity, disillusionment, lack of a clearly defined purpose and vision, all accompanied by division and conflict. The result of such attitudes and actions is a mass of churches that are plateaued or declining in membership, attendance, and vitality. Many have become havens for the disgruntled and fortresses against the Great Commission. These country clubs have become the antithesis of everything the gospel represents. Where are the pastors in all of this? Well, many pastors feel they have their backs against the wall. They want to make changes, but either they are afraid to roil the waters or they don't know how to lead. Church bullies intimidate them. Church boards are uncooperative and controlling. Consequently, pastors struggle and the churches they pastor struggle. The resulting gridlock causes attendees to leave in frustration. Other pastors are simply on cruise control. They draw their pay and don't rock the boat. Many are content to leave Jesus outside knocking at the door, Revelation 3:20. Mm-hmm. Many also lack the skill and backbone to develop a vision of a preferred future and pursue it to a fitting conclusion. Others simply walk down the path of ministry, blissfully ignorant of the impending cliff before them. So that's, a pretty good description. That was from Revision, The Key to Transforming the Church, first book I did with Aubrey Malfers. Mm-hmm. But, and just to give you some background, my dissertation was entitled Defining Characteristics of Turnaround Pastors Among Evangelical Churches in the Rocky Mountain States. And Aubrey Malfers saw a presentation that I gave at the Great Commission Research Network in 2011. And as a result, we wrote Revision. Well, Laverne Brown, Bud Brown, got a hold of that research and he contacted me and he said, is there any way to develop some assessment, training, and coaching protocols based on the DISC? We used the DISC in Myers-Briggs, and I said, I'm not sure. So we ended up meeting also with Dr. Gary Westra, and the three of us used the Berkman to do research, and we found that the Berkman gave great insight into the behaviors of pastors that work for revitalization or work against it. It was a both and thing. So as a result of our time together, we wrote the book, Pastor Unique, The Key to Transforming Your Church. And it was an interesting journey to say the least. And the great thing was when we finished, we compared what we found with what Aubrey and I had done, as well as what a number of other people done using different survey instruments. And we all came to the same conclusions, even though we used different instruments. And we discovered leadership practices that are really essential for bringing revitalization to plateaued or declining churches. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And so basically we can look at this research and we know what kinds of things pastors need to do, what kinds of personalities turnaround pastors have. And this is why assessment is so important. If they don't have that, then they have to stretch a bit, right?
That's right.
In some of those techniques. So that's exactly makes sense. And that's exactly what we're looking for, Dr. Penfold.
Well, and in Mark 1:17, well, Matthew 4:19, we all, at least I memorized that early on as a believer, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Mark adds an interesting word into that concept. He says, Jesus said, follow me and I will make you become fishers of men. A lot of people object to the fact that we're trying to change people. No, what we're trying to do is to develop people, to develop leaders, to develop godly men, and godly leaders, godly pastors who will be able to lead their churches into a bright and new future. And so it's very important to recognize that this is a discipleship process. What we're doing is we're discipling pastors, and then we're also discipling disciplers of pastors, you know, so that we can multiply the ministry. So that's where we are. So if you would like, let me share with you some information that just a summary of the materials that we have. Yep. So this is just a basic Berkman introduction. And the Berkman is like a lot of other personality typing tools in that it looks at, you know, are people introverted or extroverted? Are they people oriented or task oriented? And so Berkman has what is called usual behavior. This is how we behave. This is how people see us. This is how we see ourselves. And so introverted, extroverted, people-oriented, task-oriented, very similar. And you're very familiar with lots of typing instruments, I think, Dr. Moody, but with your background.
And this is a good one, I'll say, the Berkman as well. So this is a good, what they get good information from this.
Yes, we do. And again, we were trying to look at assessment. Secondly, we want to look at training. And thirdly, we want to look at coaching. And we do all of those with pastors, and we've had some success with that. And then the Berkman has something that's called needs or expectations. And this is different than any other typing instrument. No other instrument that we are aware of does this. But it talks about needs. What do we need? What kind of environment do we need in order for us to be most successful? And the thing about it is usual behavior is visible. People can see us. They can see that. However, our needs are invisible to others and they don't know what we need. For example, my usual behavior is up in the green, tending towards red. I tend to be a doer, but my needs are way down in the blue. And so what I need from people is far different from what they see in me. And that can create some tension and some frustration. So for people in the green, for example, they need group support and emotional support. For people that are in the blue, they need emotional support and one-on-one support. And then if people are in the yellow, they need one-on-one support and practical support. And the reds are the doers. Those are the doers. The greens are the communicators. The blues are the thinkers. And the yellows are the analyzers. So every group has different needs. And those are the general broad brushstrokes of what each group needs. And then when our needs aren't met, we don't have to. You know, when we operate in the flesh, that would be kind of an idea of the stress behavior. Mm-hmm. And when we're doing that, it's usually pretty obvious to everyone around us, sometimes before it's even available to, you know, for us to see. But those towards the top can become argumentative if they're, and those to the right can become emotional. And those to the bottom tend to be withdrawn, and those to the left become detached. So my needs are in the bottom right-hand corner, so I tend to become emotional and withdrawn under stress, and that's absolutely how I behave. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, people see our usual behavior. They don't see our needs or our expectations, but they do see our stress behavior. And so like a tree, let me just scroll up here for just a second. So like a tree, our usual behavior and stress behavior are visible. When you look at a tree, you see the leaves, you see the branches, you see the fruit, you see the bark, you see all of those things. But in order for a tree to be healthy, it has to have a great root system. And so there are needs and interests, and interests are just things that we like to do, not necessarily what we're good at, but what we like to do. Mm-hmm. But these are all four components of personality. And so the needs are unseen, but if our needs are not met, then our tree is not healthy. And that shows. So I'm going to scroll back down here quickly because I'm going to skip a whole lot of material. So we have our usual behavior. We have our needs or expectations. And those are built into us from an early, early age. Mm-hmm. And then our stress behaviors are what can happen when our needs aren't met if we don't get control of things. And there's times that we all get out of sorts. Mm-hmm. And again, just because that's the way we can behave doesn't give us permission to behave that way.
Mm-hmm. And what you're really saying is it's important to know this. It's important Absolutely. To know what your needs are, important to know how you respond as we tend to in stress. And really, this is also part of the developmental process or discipleship process, you might say, helping us be more effective as ministers of the gospel.
Yes.
If we're aware of what our particular weaknesses and strengths are.
Yes. Now, what we discovered, first off, let me back up for just a second. We found that pastors are different from the general population in 13 significant ways. We found that originally in our research, we looked at 43 different components. There were 13 components, 11 components with usual behavior, needs, and stress behaviors. And there are 10 interests. So you put all that together, that's 43 different aspects, facets of personality. And we found that pastors were different from the general population in 13 out of those 43, which is remarkable. So, you know, when you say pastors are a different breed, we are.
We really are. Getting around it.
That's right. But we also found that there were 7 significant differences between what we would call a revitalization pastor or a turnaround pastor and a maintenance-oriented pastor. 7 significant differences. And when we actually had a PhD psychometric statistician who ran all the numbers for us, and he said, the differences between these groups are large enough that no matter how many pastors you put in here, those things are going to always be different. Mm-hmm. So they were medium and large differences. So we found, first off, and this was a very interesting thing, was kind of a surprise a bit, but we found that the revitalization leaders were more assertive than their maintenance counterparts. So if you look at the chart here, the turnaround pastors scored an average of 66.5 on a 99-point scale. The maintenance pastors were 37.8%. They were not assertive at all. They're not even as assertive as the general population by a significant margin.
Yes.
So you look at there's a large difference there. So what does that mean? It means that the turnaround pastors are more tell than suggest. And I've been in meetings and I've done it where I say, oh, what do you think? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What do you think? You see, those are suggesters. And we found the revitalization pastors were verbally assertive, express differences, and they seek to convince. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they are dominant. I've worked with some pastors whose assertiveness is 99, and what we have to do with them is say, you know what, you need to learn how to dial this back a little bit.
Take a breath.
Yeah, because you're a bit of a steamroller. Mm-hmm. But the maintenance-oriented pastors tend to be deferent and agreeable. They strive for agreement, and they avoid conflict. And the assertive pastors say, you know, there's going to be conflict. It's just going to happen. Let's just plow right on through it. So there's a huge difference between these two groups, between tell versus suggest. And we have seen this, you know, play out. And as we work with pastors, it's amazing. Most pastors that we work with really do score in the low end. There are exceptions, but most pastors who are struggling tend to be deferent and agreeable. and they avoid conflict and so on. So mm-hmm. now restlessness, this is another one. The maintenance-oriented pastors were a little bit more restless than the general population, but we can learn a lot from this. First off, what this says is 41.3 for the general population tells us that the general population likes pretty much the status quo. And if you have status quo in the church, you're just going to continue to do what you've always done. And that's not a good thing. You know, somebody said it this way, the only difference between a rut and a grave is the length. He said, no, I said, you know, graves are deeper. I said, well, not if you're driving on the Alcan Highway. They used to have a sign that said, choose your rut wisely. You're going to be in it for the next 2,300 miles. But when churches are stuck and you just keep doing the same thing, you're just going to stay stuck. So the revitalization pastors are much more restless. So in other words, they're responsive and attentive. They initiate change and they adapt easily to variety. Whereas maintenance-oriented pastors are more concentrative, not easily distracted, focused attention. They want to just sit down and concentrate on one thing at a time. Don't bother me. Don't upset me. And and again, if we go back, there is a significant difference between the two, you know, almost a 20 point spread between the two.
Yeah.
So any comments related to that, brother?
No, you're spot on. So someone may be listening and saying, well, I'm more of the, I'm kind of the maintenance part. And so forth. What we're saying is a person has to be more assertive if they're going to turn a church around. Yes. And they have to be more, you know, not okay with the status quo, so to speak.
Absolutely. You're going to
be a bull in a china shop, so to speak, but right. You do realize you're going to have to take some action to initiate some change.
Yes. And you have to tell people, this is the way, walk ye in it, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And that's hard for some pastors to do. I was working with a group not too long ago, and the pastor was a great guy. He's wonderful. And by the way, these pastors are not bad or good, just the way they are. But this guy was always, well, what do you think? What do you think? And they have a hard time making their minds up. And, you know, after 30 or 40 minutes of saying, what do you think? Everybody said, well, let's just move on. Well, they've not accomplished a thing, except what do you think?
Right. And as a pastor, you often know things that need to be done.
Yes.
And so what we're asking is go ahead and suggest that. And it's going to be harder initially for a person that's not their personality, but it will get easier. And people, your congregation will work with you, you know,
yes.
if you approach it with the right attitude.
Yes.
And so forth.
Well, the second church that I pastored, and every church that I pastored full time had a turnaround, and I praise God for that. But in the second one, the chairman of the board was 75 years old. His name was Archie. And my first week there, Archie came to me and he said, Gordon, we know we're dying. What do we have to do to turn this around? And those were his exact words. And I said, I don't know, Archie, but we will do it together.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. We did. It was, we were there for 14 years and God, it was a small community. And yet God, we saw a lot, the average age went down from about 70 down to 35. We saw a lot of young families come in. And in that church, there were 86 my first Sunday, and I buried 64 of them over the course of 14 years. It wasn't that I was that hard on them, mind you. It was just.
Yeah. That's right. A lot of us have had that kind of situation. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're spot on there, my friend.
Okay. Then freedom, usual and freedom usual and freedom need both showed up. Okay. And again, you can see that the maintenance-oriented pastors here are 20 plus points below, and they're not even quite as, they don't exhibit as much freedom as the general population. So what does that mean? It means they're individualistic and innovative. They're independent thinkers and unconventional. And now this is one area for me, my score is really low on this one. And I see how I work. I like to start a project and finish it and so on. But when we get to freedom need, I more than make up for it. So any rate, but the maintenance pastors, they value precedence. They seek uniformity. They're conventional. So in one sense, I have a little bit of a tug of war inside of me because my usual behavior is very settled. But my need is certainly anything but settled. So freedom usual is, again, independent thinking. And so now freedom need. Now we found, again, there's quite a difference now. The maintenance-oriented pastors and the general population are almost identical. But again, the revitalization pastors are 22 and a half points above. So what does it mean, freedom need? Freedom in action and thought, freedom in goals and schedule, freedom from control. So I'm very much, let's get things done, but don't get in my space. Don't crowd me. Don't tell me what to do, when to do, and how to do it. Give me the freedom. See, that's freedom need. And then, but the maintenance-oriented pastors tend to want a predictable environment, familiar, well-established rules and procedures, and a need to be informed. And the other guys are saying, let's just
get it done.
Yeah, let's forget about the torpedoes, full speed ahead, you know, yeah. Kind of a thing. And I won't quote the whole quote from that.
No. But that you can see this with COVID too, you know.
Yes.
You have to be able to adapt. And then the control, that gets in the way of other people being able to do ministry if we've got to have our hands on everything. We have to have oversight. But this fellow is trying to move, trying to move rapidly.
And going back to the restlessness, remember, general population doesn't want to change. They want status quo. And so it's always hard to move the needle on anything. But as pastors, when our churches are stuck, we've got to begin to move the needle, or we're just going to continue to dig a deeper hole. And, 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. So,
yeah.
Okay. Now, thought need. Now, this was really a surprise. We figured that the revitalization pastors are ready, fire. Oh, now let's aim. And then they'll say, did we hit anything? But actually, we found the converse was true. Mm-hmm. They were much more thoughtful before they pull the trigger. They're not afraid to pull the trigger, but they want to examine what happens. What will happen if we do this? What will be the ramifications of our actions? What other impacts will we see in our ministry? And what we discovered was that the maintenance-oriented pastors, something would come up and they'd say, let's just take care of it and move on, because I've got my schedule and I don't need any interruptions. And so sometimes they'd make decisions without thinking through the consequences, and then disaster ensues. So what we discovered, these are not ready, fire, aim people. They're ready, aim. Let's check. Let's aim again. Let's get ready. Let's make sure we're ready. Okay, now we're ready to pull the trigger. And then they're not afraid to pull the trigger, but they prayerfully think things through. And so when somebody has a low thought need score, we can give them some coaching tips that will help them avoid those black holes that they might step in the thought process. So this means that they need ample time to think, the turnaround pastors. They get counsel and suggestions. They discuss concerns. And so, go ahead.
This is key. This is why they're not a bull in a china shop. So they're they're talking to all their deacons. They're talking to the key leaders in their church. They've thought it through. They prayed it through. And so they're people of action, but they've really thought through what they're doing. That's a difference in what people sometimes think of these
people. Right. Now, when people get into the 90s on their thought need, and quite a few pastors are there, then they suffer from what we call the paralysis of analysis. They can't pull the trigger because they have to have more information. I tend to be in that area, so I sometimes have to balance everything. But then I know we've got to move, and then we move. Mm-hmm. And now the low thought needs, they want immediate action. They want to minimize ambiguity, and they want to limit discussion because they have their program of things they want to do, and it just doesn't work. So does that make sense to you?
It does. It's perfect. And hopefully our listeners as well, they could always email us questions@nafb.org. But it's good to kind of take this in. Okay. Yes. You've got musical here.
Yeah, this is one that was kind of a surprise. We had no idea. Now, remember their interests that we look at, there are 10 of them. We barely mentioned them. But musical interest, the turnaround pastors had a higher score. And what that means is they have an ear for sound. Mm-hmm. I have a good friend that has a real high music interest score. He can't play and he can't sing, but he loves music. but he also understands what is palatable. I'm going to use a mixed metaphor, what is palatable to the ear in preaching and so forth. And notice the maintenance oriented pastors are not even as strong as the general population in this area. So this one is a real surprise to us as well. And then social service. This is the only one where the turnaround pastors had lower scores than the maintenance oriented pastors. And what we discovered is that the turnaround pastors are really better at delegation and so on. They're not there just to pet the sheep. They're there to lead the flock. And there's a huge difference between those two things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of pastors will score in the 90s, high 90s. I worked with one pastor. He's a church planner. The church has grown from zero to 750. His social service score is 99. However, he has learned very well to delegate. He has other scores as well that kind of compensate. Mm-hmm. But we have to not just pet the sheep. We've got to lead the flock. Right. And so here are the seven best leadership practices, just a summary. Don't suggest, tell. Note opportunities to initiate change. Three, see yourself as an innovator. And we can help guys grow in these areas. Develop a bias towards action. That's the thought need. Mm-hmm. Avoid snap decisions. Create pleasing auditory experiences and train others to provide spiritual care. So those are kind of the coaching practices that we use with pastors.
Well, you're spot on with that. And really, I'm a pastor listening to this. I'm thinking, okay, these are activities I need to be engaged in. I'm a lay person. I need to try to help encourage my pastor in that way. Yes. Yes. Not be one to get in the way, if it will, or even hinder some of those ways. Now, really, it is helpful for a pastor to have taken the Berkman.
Yes.
And we should explain some of the things we do through our office in North American Ministries is we try to help folks take an instrument called the DISC and something like an instrument called the MBTI, where they learn more about their personality and so forth, right, and that involvement in ministry. The Berkman's a bit different. And so we're encouraging folks to take the Berkman. And if you're a pastor and you'd like to take the Berkman, or if you're a lay person and you would like to set that up, send us an email at questions@nafwb.org, and we'll talk to you about how you can do that.
Okay, good.
We'll summarize that a little bit. We would work it out where you could take the Berkman. There is a fee involved.
Yes.
And we would explain the fee. And then you would get, there's a way to have individual feedback or group feedback from Dr. Penfold and his team. One is just an hour where you're kind of get the Berkman, like a little bit expanded from what we've done today.
Yes.
The second hour is individual. You as a pastor get this feedback from Dr. Penfold or a team member who have done this with lots of pastors all over the world, we might say. And it's a way to, it's really a great way of figuring out, this is my personality. This is some areas I can work on. These are some assets I have that I can really utilize. And would you say that's it pretty much in a nutshell, Dr. Sure. Penfold?
Yes, I would. And so I'd encourage people to take the Berkman, meet with a Berkman coach, understand your personality, and then develop a ministry plan and obtain coaching. And Dr. Moody, one of the things that you're doing, I think, with Danny Dwyer, is you guys are developing a cadre of coaches.
Yes.
And that's so important. And I would really encourage the coaches to take the Berkman.
Yeah.
And then be able to use it with their folks. And we could even do some training to help you become more effective in administering the Berkman, as we've got to spread the wealth. Absolutely. We have to do discipleship too. And and then just obtain coaching. It's amazing. Over my life, I've generally had somebody that I could call or contact if I had problems, and I did. And it was invaluable. We're Americans, and we're Daniel Boone, and we're individualists, and we don't, and you're a free will Baptist. I mean, you don't need any help. Isn't that right?
Well, we do. We got to show you the church covenant. We talk about the one another's and so forth. And so this is what we're doing. We're working. This is a one another thing where we truly are better together. And the coaches that you mentioned Dr. Penfold. We hope to have 100 by the end of next year.
Great.
And we're going to try to train other interested pastors in, you know, those 10 strategies that you're aware right. of. But really, anyone, any pastor who's interested in bettering themselves through the Berkman, and then some of the other assessment opportunities we provide through us and North American Ministries, you reach out to us and we'll do everything we can to help you to be the person that the Lord has made you to be, we should say.
Amen. Amen. Yeah. Self-discovery. We need to know who the Lord is. We need to know who we are. And when we have both of those pieces in place, we're going to be much more effective as servants of Jesus Christ.
Well, we thank you, my friend. We thank you for your ministry to Free Will Baptist and the greater Church of the Lord, what you're trying to do to help churches all throughout, not just the United States, but all through the world. And thank you for what you've done for us. And we hope that many of our pastors will be coming your way. We'll work that out. If you email us at questions@nafwb.org. You could also email questions you have about what we've discussed today, and we'll be sure to try to give you some information. I need to mention Pastor Unique. So Dr. Penfold mentioned this is one of the books the coaches are reading, and we encourage this for our folks. There will be a revision of this book, but it's I think this book is good and fine, Dr. Penfold, for them to read at this particular point.
Yes.
So I encourage folks to do that. And then just be in touch with us. The resources we've talked about today are provided through Refresh. More specifically, some of the Rekindle coaches are trying to work with some of what Dr. Penfold has talked about today. So check that out at nafwb.org/refresh, and there'll be something for you. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Penfold.
Oh, thank you for having me, Dr. Moody. I just appreciate you so much and appreciate your ministry so much. And I pray for you regularly.
Hey, I appreciate it. And keep those prayers coming, my friend. And
okay.
Hey, we appreciate all of you all who've listened in today. We encourage you to like this. If you're watching it on Facebook, take it and share it. If you're looking at YouTube, go and like it there. You could also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Everything you do makes a difference. And remember, we truly are better together. Thank you Amen. For joining us today.